I hope there's more opportunities, but I don't know. I mean, I really don't. And that's stuff that's out of my control. I mean, my future is a beautiful mystery, I think. The present is such a gift. And being with the guys and having fans with our stadium and maybe snow on an NFC Championship game. I mean, I'm going to enjoy these moments for sure. Just not worry about what happens down the line.
Yes, the future is just a beautiful mystery to Aaron Rodgers, as it is for all of us. As we await the AFC and NFC Championship games on Sunday, we'll get something old with Rodgers and Tom Brady at Lambeau Field, and something new with Josh Allen headed to Kansas City to take on the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes, or so we think. Today, our old friend and noted NFL nerd Mina Kimes breaks down all of it, and she explains why Sunday is the single greatest day of the year. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Friday, January 22nd. This is ESPN Daily. 3, 2, 1. Mina, hello.
Pablo, hello.
Mina Kimes is an NFL analyst for ESPN and the host of the Mina Kimes Show, featuring Lenny. So I need to know where you are, Mina, on the football excitement alert scale right now, because I imagine for a true tape grinder like yourself, Conference Championship Sunday is in some ways maybe even better than the Super Bowl.
If the football excitement scale, as you called it, was 1 through 10, Conference Championship Sunday is about a 15 for me. And there's no maybe about whether or not it's more exciting than the Super Bowl, Pablo. It absolutely is. This is my favorite Sunday of the year. And in part because by the time we get to the Super Bowl, we've talked about the same matchups over and over. And it's usually like, oh, how many times can we say, well, you got to rush Brady with four, you know, before you're like, okay, I get it. And of course, Tom Brady's always been in the Super Bowl for the last decade or so. So that's a phrase I've said a lot and meant it every time.
I've heard you say that. I was going to say, you're the person I first heard really make that a meme.
I mean, it's true, but it's also more fun when you get to talk about other things. And this particular set of games, it's really the best possible combination of teams, in my opinion. And there's a reason why the lines in Vegas are very close, because it actually looks like a pretty well-matched pair of games.
I want to start with Buccaneers-Packers, Mina, because this was not a close game when these two teams played back in October.
Inside handoff, Rojo up the gut, touchdown Tampa Bay, fire the cannons, the Bucs on 37 on the board.
Rodgers was abysmal in that game. He threw zero touchdowns, he threw two picks, he completed less than half his passes in Tampa Bay when they played each other the first time. And Tampa Bay destroyed, perhaps not coincidentally, Green Bay 38-10. So how did that blowout happen?
Well, it was such a strange game, Pablo, because Aaron Rodgers has had this incredible season, which I'm sure we'll talk about. This is the one real blemish on it.
Rodgers takes the snap, 3rd and 10, drops, pressure coming against the pass. It's intercepted, picked off down the sideline, 20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown Tampa Bay! Touchdown Buccaneers, Jamal Dean!
He stunk. There's no really nice way to put it. Now, he stunk in part because the offensive line in Green Bay, which has been spectacular, one of the best in football all year, got beat up front. Rodgers was sacked 6 times, pressured 21 times. I mean, most of the time this year, he's looked cool as a cucumber back there, but this was not the case. And as you mentioned, had these very surprising interceptions coming from him. I think he finished the game with a passer rating of like 35, okay? So really, it was all about the Buccaneers' pass rush beating Green Bay up front and Aaron Rodgers being uncomfortable as a result. And that was also reflected in the running game. Aaron Jones had just 10 carries. He averaged like 1.5 yards per rush. Again, very dissimilar from the rest of the season. But you saw, I think, what could or should, if in the eyes of Tampa Bay, be the formula for beating Green Bay, which is if you can stop the running game and keep the Packers from executing their play action passing attack, which flows from that, and get them into third down and get pressure on Rodgers in obvious passing situations, that's your best chance of beating them. Now, all those things I just said, very few teams in the NFL have been able to do that, but Tampa was able to do that the last time these two teams met.
So, Mina, things obviously have changed since then, as you alluded to. That was back in week six when that game happened. So, in what you've seen since then, who's been better this year, Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady?
Aaron Rodgers has undeniably been the better quarterback this year. And he is my pick, by the way, for MVP. It's between him and Patrick Mahomes. It's close, but Rodgers has had an unreal season. I mean, just statistically, you know, he's been first in QBR. Brady was 10th. He ranked third in yards per attempt. Brady was 11th. He had 48 touchdowns. Brady had 40. He only threw five picks. Brady threw 12. You get the idea. So while Tom Brady is the most accomplished quarterback of all time, I believe Aaron Rodgers is the most talented. Patrick Mahomes is kind of giving him a run for that. And when these two goats meet, I don't know where goats meet, in a field, a meadow. Anyways, one of the goats.
Goats meet makes me sort of hungry, honestly, that phrase.
Ooh. Oh, wow. You just took it there. I guess goats will be herding in Green Bay this weekend, but wow. The goat whose home field it is, home meadow it is, has been the better one this weekend. That's metaphor really just got out of control.
So I need to understand better, Mina, how the Packers' offense can be slowed down. Because behind the aforementioned goat, I mean, they dropped 484 yards. And wow, we can really take this farm metaphor even further. He dropped him on the Rams, who had the number one defense in the league this year, which is something that nobody had done in the playoffs against the number one defense since, I believe, the Elias Sports Bureau even started tracking these things in 1970. So how do the Bucs slow down what the Packers and Aaron Rodgers have been doing?
This is an offense that's been dominant all season, and everything is clicking. You're seeing Aaron Rodgers, he's really bought in to Matt LaFleur's scheme, which comes from the, you know, Shanahan school of outside zone, a lot of play action, using the tight ends and backs in the passing game. Rodgers has embraced it. He's operated in the structure of it. And then he's elevated in a way that sometimes quarterbacks in those systems become more of a product of the system. Not the case with Aaron Rodgers. He's explosive. They have an incredible deep passing game. And they have Davante Adams, who I believe is the best wide receiver in the NFL right now. Now, as far as what the Bucs can do to stop it, the easy answer is kind of what they did the first time. Pressure, pressure, pressure. The Bucs defense is very aggressive. You saw that against New Orleans, where they played a lot of press man, used the physicality of their corners against Drew Brees. Rodgers is a much formidable foe at this stage in his career, but I can't see the Bucs deviating from that approach very much, especially given that the Packers lost their starting left tackle, David Bakhtiari, not too long ago, and I imagine the Bucs pass rush and Todd Bowles, their defensive coordinator, will want to take advantage of that weakness.
So you said pressure, pressure, pressure. And, you know, a wise person once told me, Mina, you got to get pressure on Brady with four. I forget where I heard that. But that's a thing that I've been told really does apply to him. So when the Bucs offense is on the field, I mean, they look like they're in a comfort zone of their own after picking apart the Saints last week. What do the Packers do against them?
The wise man you heard was correct, because it really is about pressure. But I'd argue, Pablo, this season more than ever, it's about pressure when it comes to Tom Brady. The delta, the drop-off between... I'm trying to use
the word
delta,
thank you for dumbing it down for me, yeah.
Between when he's kept clean in the pocket versus when he's pressured is bigger than any quarterback in the NFL. And it's frankly why the Saints dispatched the Bucs with these the first two times around. That Saints pass rush made quick work of Brady and made him very uncomfortable. And I think if Green Bay wants to win that front, Za'Darius Smith, Kenny Clark, Rashawn Gary, Preston Smith as well on the outside, they have to exploit it and turn up the heat on Brady. The Tampa Bay offensive line is very good. They've been increasingly using play action as a way to buy time for Brady. But while the Packers have Jaire Alexander, who's a fantastic cornerback, if Tom Brady has time and is kept clean, they're going to have a hard time stopping him.
So So the game is going to be in Green Bay, and I'm looking at the weather forecast right now. It's not looking completely terrible by Green Bay standards for January. We're talking like high 20s, maybe a dusting of light snow, some cheeseheads in the stands. And that's where I'm curious, Mina, is like home field and the fans who will be present. It hasn't mattered all that much this season, obviously, but when it comes to the goats trying to graze on that frozen tundra, like, is that going to matter on Sunday?
Honestly, I kind of don't think it will. If this was a different quarterback coming to Green Bay, a younger quarterback, or you know, someone like Jared Goff who struggled in cold weather, I might agree. But we're talking about Tom Brady, who is one of the best cold weather quarterbacks of all time. I don't think the icy conditions potentially or the presence of a few fans will rattle him. It's much more likely that Za'Darius Smith will be the one rattling him. And along those lines, while I do think this game could be close, I'm picking the Packers just because that offense has been so dominant this season. I just don't see it stopping now.
All right, Mina, we went age before beauty in the A block. So after the break, let's break down Chiefs and Bills.
Tom Brady's very insulted right now.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with the smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So, Mina, as we are monitoring updates on Patrick Mahomes right now, we know that he's been practicing this week after entering the concussion protocol, and he's still uncertain for Sunday. But I want to start here by just having you level with the good people of Kansas City, who I think are just trapped in a blue tent of their own emotions. Mm. How should they be feeling at this moment?
I would say hopeful based on the reports we're hearing. And, you know, when he went out of the game on Sunday, you heard, well, the average quarterback going through this takes about 7 days. And naturally that caused some concern, but every case is different. And so until we hear he's out, Chiefs fans have reason to hope he'll play. Now, all of that said, if he doesn't play, as much as I love hashtag anything is possible, I tried to make any given Sunday happen. And
you did.
Mahomes kind of big time me. It's fine. Anything's possible is good too. I kind of don't think anything is possible if it's him against the Buffalo Bills for an entire game.
So let's lean into the optimism around the guy who stole your meme there. If Mahomes is looking anything like his normal self on Sunday, Mina, how do the Bills even begin to try to contain him?
Well, I think the phrase you just used, anything like his normal self, is really important because one thing we should note is even if Mahomes does play, not only did he potentially suffer from, you know, a concussion, he also hurt his toe. And
right.
Was clearly hampered in the game, which is another thing he's dealing with right now. And while Mahomes is deadly inside and outside the pocket, a lack of mobility hurts his production. We saw that in 2019 when he returned from hurting his ankle. And he wasn't able to make those dazzling plays outside the pocket where he's, you know, twisting his body in 300 different directions and throwing on the run.
Mahomes. What an angle! Patrick Mahomes! To Travis Kelce. It defies physics.
The first time the Bills played Patrick, they did what you see actually a fair amount of defenses do against him, which is they did not blitz him. They played soft zone coverage and basically dared Kansas City to run the ball. And that's exactly what Kansas City did with a lot of success. I personally think that is the right approach. Like, if you have a choice between Patrick Mahomes beating you over the top with Tyreek Hill versus the Chiefs running the ball and, you know, using all three downs, you lean towards the latter. But if Mahomes is not fully himself, Leslie Frazier, their defensive coordinator, might dial up a little more pressure.
So a Bills pessimist would listen to all of that and say that, hold on, we played the Chiefs back in October in week six, and they beat us 26-17. And honestly, the score is kind of too kind for the reality of that game. If I recall correctly, they were kind of in control, Kansas City was, pretty much the whole time. So why would things be different this time around?
Two words, Josh Allen. He has been spectacular over the last month and a half. And in that particular game, Pablo, you know, I mentioned that the Bills were afraid to pressure Mahomes or blitz him, rather. The Chiefs blitzed the heck out of Allen. I was trying to find the right appropriate word.
Thank
there.
You for being very Philip Rivers-ish in yes. your lack of profanity.
Yes, yes. They blitzed him over approximately half of his dropbacks, and he struggled.
Scrimmage, three wide to the right of Allen. Chiefs are blitzing Allen. He floats a pass incomplete. Right now, he is not very comfortable.
When he was blitzed in that game, he averaged just 3.4 yards per attempt. Josh Allen, since then, has been arguably the best quarterback in football against the blitz.
Rolling to his right. Stops, starts again, throws down the boundary. And a tumbling catch made near midfield. It's Josh Allen using his legs again.
He's been so excellent at, escaping the pocket, throwing on the run, or just keeping plays alive with subtle movements inside the pocket. And also really smart. He's played really smart football. He's been the offensive line in him. They've been better at anticipating pressure and having answers for the blitz. So I would say for Bills fans, the hope that this game turns out differently not only stems from the fact that maybe Mahomes isn't entirely himself, but also that Josh Allen has become a better version of himself since then.
I want to ask you about the Chiefs' defense here, because we spend all this time, all the time, talking about offense. And meanwhile, like we just saw Patrick Mahomes leave that game against the Browns, and the Kansas City defense very conspicuously not choke that game away. They held up. They pulled it off. I was shocked when I saw that happen, even though it was against Cleveland. How are they able to do that?
Their stars came through. So the Chiefs roster is very top heavy, Pablo, and that can work in your favor when the players you pay a lot of money play up to their salaries. It can work against you when they don't. Dallas Cowboys, okay? But in this particular game, you saw guys like Chris Jones, defensive tackle who's been, you know, spectacular all year, Frank Clark, who's been more up and down, Anthony Hitchens, all of them made big plays in the final moments of that game, stopping the Browns' last drive before they punted. Tyrann Mathieu, who's the heart of that Chiefs defense, had a key, not just a big interception in that game, but also a key blitz, again, in the waning minutes of the game that proved impactful. And that's really the Chiefs' defense in a nutshell. Like, they're not great, frankly. None of the defenses left are elite. I'd argue, I guess, the Bucs is the best. But in the Bills and Chiefs game, these defenses are actually pretty similar. But what you're seeing from them is what you saw last year, which is while they're not consistently dominant, they have players, a few stars like Jones and Mathieu, who will make big plays and impactful moments and get turnovers so that Patrick Mahomes can get back on the field.
All right, so we've hit Mahomes, we've hit Allen, we've paid our respects, finally, to the Kansas City defense. Who or what is the X factor in this game to you?
The man, the myth, the barbecue legend, Big Red, my beloved Andy Reid. I mean, look, Sean McDermott's been fabulous. I think Reid said he should be coach of the year. But Andy Reid, 62-year-old Andy Reid, coming off of, you know, a few games where you saw coaches like Mike Vrabel, Mike Tomlin, and then Kevin Stefanski in this game punt the ball away and, you know, hopes that their defenses could do something. Andy Reid on fourth down lined up his backup quarterback Chad Henne in the gun.
They snap it. They're going for it. They flood it right. Caught. Tyreek Hill stays in bounds. The Kansas City Chiefs are going to advance in the AFC playoffs.
Mina, I don't remember a time when so many people simultaneously started talking about testicles on Twitter.
Yes, many euphemisms were used. Stones, cojones, you know, what have you. But I just... So you asked about the X factor. To me, the X factor is always Andy Reid, because he is not only innovative as a play caller, and he's shaken off, I think, a lot of the clock management questions that dogged him for a while. He also is just brave, which is, I'm going to say that instead of finding a new euphemism. He's a brave coach. And so when push comes to shove, you can count on him to not just make the right call, but the gutsy call that could decide a game.
What is the deal with Andy Reid's mask, by the way? Have we figured out, like, what shape? Like, what's he doing wrong? I'm still trying to figure out the geometry on why it is it looks so weird.
It looks like someone was asked to fold a napkin but didn't know how. But it's on his face.
Yes, it's like you asked me to wrap a Christmas gift and I have no tape and barely any wrapping paper.
Good luck.
Before you go, I need another prediction from you. A prediction that I will in no way weaponize against you in the future. Who is winning this game?
So I am sticking with the Chiefs. So I'm going to chalk. But I reserve the right to abandon that minutes into the game if it looks like Patrick Mahomes is less than himself.
Wow. Wow. You're building, Mina, you're building an escape hatch into your very unconfident hot take.
Yeah, I'm the opposite of Andy Reid.
Mina Kimes, thank you for joining us, and please don't be offended when I Photoshop your face onto a Bills fan being thrown through a table. Coming up, we talk to a Bucks fan who's a real PT peer about falling in love with a quarterback who is the opposite of a diaper dandy.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Here's another story I want you to know. Fan bases are basically tribes, and if you listen to this show, you already know a lot about the customs and the folkways of the maniacs who love the Packers and the Bills and the Chiefs. But before we send you off into conference championship weekend, I wanted to check in with the most elusive tribe that you'll see on Sunday. So I called up the most famous Tampa Bay Bucks fan that I've ever seen. Dick Vitale, I need to understand how it is that you became a fan, a super fan of Tampa Bay sports.
Well, you know, Pablo, first of all, you know, I've always tried to be loyal to where I live. When I was living out in the Jersey area, I was a big Yankees guy, New York Giants guy. But I'm over here now, and I got season tickets for, you know, the Rays. I've had them since their inception, since they started playing baseball there over 21 years ago. And then I also have season tickets for the Bucks games, and I just love sports, and I love all kinds of sports, and it's been a great, great year to be a fan here in the Tampa area.
Yeah, I saw you, Dick. You put a video online in which you were standing by your pool congratulating the Tampa Bay Lightning winning the Stanley Cup, and you called that Stanley Cup Phase 1.
My sports chatter of the day right there, baby. Phase 1. There's 3 phases if you're a Tampa Bay area fan like I am.
We're in Phase 3, right? Phase 2 with the Rays. They did a great job. We lost, but we went to the World Series, get a great, great effort. And then thirdly, right now we got the Bucks one game away from playing in the Super Bowl at their own site, their own field. And I know many of my friends and people I've been talking to not giving us much a chance. They're all feeling that we got no shot with the Packers, the cold weather, the fact that it's, you know, Green Bay, Aaron Rodgers, player of the year, all that. Don't count us out, Pablo. We got number 12, Mr. Brady.
Tell me what it's been like to just root for this team with Brady and Gronk and all of this hype surrounding it.
Well, it's been really terrific. And, you know, it took a while. I think the pandemic certainly created a little dilemma in the initial starting of the team because they didn't have a chance to practice. They didn't have a chance to develop rhythm, timing, and all that. But they've taken off now the last six games. They've been unbelievable. I love it. You know, I can't wait. I change my church schedule on Sunday when the Bucks play at 1 o'clock. I make sure I go to Mass at 5 o'clock for a Mass here. And I got church where I go, Catholic religion, now the Lady of Angels. So again, I become a fanatic.
Dick, I am, full disclosure, I'm a former altar boy within the Catholic Church, so I understand the power of your ecumenical sacrifice there. So I actually want you to advise your fellow tribesmen inside of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers fandom here. How would you advise them to feel headed into a really consequential, really nerve-wracking game against Aaron Rodgers?
I think that we have the ability to make this game go right down the wire. I would just advise them to get a lot of Pepto-Bismol, get a lot of Maalox, and make sure you're chewing on it all. But I'm screaming to my wife in the games, get me the Maalox, Lorraine, get me the Pepto-Bismol. My stomach is churning on every possession.
Dick, when's the last time you've been this nervous for a team? Do you remember?
You know, when I coached, I was going to be a nervous wreck. And you're a Catholic, so you understand this. In the Catholic religion, the saint for when things are tough, Saint Jude. And I've had Saint Jude in my pocket since I've been like, oh man, 6, 7, 8 years old. It's been with me forever. And you know, I naturally have lost a bunch of them, but I've always got every day a Saint Jude card. And I squeeze Saint Jude every time it gets tough during a game. Man, I'm there working St. Jude. Come on, let Brady throw that pass. Let Snell throw that strikeout. I'm a wacko. 81 years old, I still act about 12, though. I happen to feel good about what I do. I don't call it work, Pablo. My father worked. He pressed coats in the factory from 7 in the morning every day, 7 in the morning to 4 o'clock, come home 4 or 5 o'clock, put a security guard uniform on, and work the mall 6 to 12. That's work.
Dick Vitale, God bless you. And I say this with all sincerity. Please never change.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate and really honored that you called me to be part of your podcast.
Maybe the only thing Dick Vitale is as passionate about as his fandom is his support of cancer research. You can find out more at dickvitaleonline.com. I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by Alexander Hyacinth, Mike Johns, Steve Martin, Ryan Nantel, Andy Tennant, Eve Tro, Chris Tuminello, and Aaron Vale. Special thanks this week to Max Brodsky, Sania Blue, Andres Soto, Troy Farkas, Garrett Lang, Jenny Keegan, and Jackson Udjulo. I'll talk to you Monday.